Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday the 15th of July, recording at 7:20 p.m. British Summer Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various different asset classes. And as there were no particularly interesting or critical highlights in here today, I'll jump right in with that big picture outlook. First, in terms of global stock markets, I maintain that we are in a generation of mean reversion for the U.S. stock market in terms of valuations. Mean reversion, in other words, contracting valuations, rising yields, usually occurs following market bubbles. And it's a process. They say it takes approximately a generation when people realize that the good old days in terms of just rocketing share prices are not going to come back, and so, not surprisingly, they become a little bit more conservative. Now, whether that mean reversion involves a series of declining highs and declining lows for stock markets, or whether it's just this big sideways trading range with, say, a glass ceiling, as we saw from 67 through into the early 80s, for Wall Street, a glass ceiling for the Dow at 1,025, really does depend more on monetary policy than GDP growth. And I want to emphasize here that the big variable in stock markets, stock market performance, that is not growth. It is these periods of contracting and expanding PE ratios. So a generation of PE ratio contraction, rising yields is what I think is on the cards for Wall Street. All history is on my side. That doesn't guarantee that it'll happen this time, but I find it very difficult to believe that the U.S. stock market could fuel another bubble anytime soon. And valuations in the U.S. are generous relative to the rest of the world. So that's the contraction. Now, so what? What are the implications for other markets? Well, I've often referred to the U.S. Leash effect. Given the size of the U.S. market, it does exert a dominant influence. Hope springs eternal all around the world that stock markets, other stock markets, will uncouple from that U.S. shadow, but it has never proved to be the case for very long, and I don't see any reason why that should change anytime soon. So, the basic premise is that when Wall Street is steady, let alone rising, as we've seen recently, that's very bullish for other stock markets, assuming that there's no reason to for them to be under a particular cloud, but the general influence is certainly benign for other stock markets. And that means that the Wall Street leash effect, that leash is expanding, allowing markets that are fashionable, where confidence is high, to run quite strongly, as we've seen in recent months. And really, as we've seen from that 2003, March 2003 low, that was an important turning point for global stock markets, as you know. Now, the other side of this two-edged sword, the Wall Street leash effect, is when Wall Street is weak, the leash contracts, not least because American investors start to pull money, take money out of overseas markets, bring money back home. Influence, negative influence on Wall Street certainly is felt almost immediately in Europe, and then it does tend to spread around the globe. At least that's what's always happened in the past. So the danger periods for global stock markets are when Wall Street is in retreat, and the bullish periods are when Wall Street is either rising or trending sideways in a reasonably steady fashion overall. Now, fortunately, these secular bear markets do not overlap, although the cyclical swings are very similar. We will see bubbles in other markets, such as Japan's bubble in the 1980s, And Japan went through a long mean reversion valuation contraction, best seen if you study book values for Japan, rather than say PE ratios because of the accounting policies. They don't always consolidate all the earnings. Parent company doesn't consolidate the earnings necessarily. But I don't want to digress. Other Asian markets saw their mean reversion beginning prior to the Asian crisis and continuing very sharply after that. And then, of course, they got hit again when the US NASDAQ bubble burst. So valuations in Asia are much lower. And then there are other markets which nobody paid any attention to until to speak of until recent years, such as the Eastern European stock markets. And they, even after the gains that we've seen since the March 2003 turning point, are still on quite conservative valuations, particularly against Wall Street. So those are the markets that are really going to perform well when the US market is, as I say, steady to rising. And then, of course, we have the supply and elasticity theme markets. A number of these are extremely interesting in this cycle. As we've seen, a generational long process, and it was a long generation of commodity markets, industrial resources basically being in a long bear market, and that's now given way to a long bull market. More about that a little later in this broadcast. But so that's an important theme. And if I distill it all down, what are the big themes for this global stock market cycle? Well, I think certainly emerging markets is one of them. I tend to feel that the risks are lower in the Asian emerging markets, but there can be a very strong bull case made for emerging markets in Central and South America, where they are likely and have been benefiting from commodity price appreciation and are likely to continue to benefit from that. The biggest question marks over governance really lie with South America. Now, then we have the resources markets such as Russia. Well, here we've got authoritarian capitalism, if it's not communist capitalism anymore. And I think that minority shareholder rights are much more likely to be trampled in that environment than they are, say, in a robust democracy. China also suffers for the same reason there. We have communist capitalism, which, as I've said before, is a bit of an oxymoron. So among the Asian markets, I strongly prefer the democracies. I like India most of all, as you know, for on a very long-term basis. I don't need to say any more about that. I've written about it plenty, perhaps too much. And then we have the other Asian markets, which are major suppliers to China. Now, if people fear a hard landing in China, markets such as Thailand are going to be wallflowers at best, to be declining more likely. And that can apply to the Philippines, but as well Indonesia also. But if they are a little bit more confident about the Chinese economy, then investors, a number of investors are going to conclude the best way to play China is to play China through its other countries that are major suppliers. Japan has also benefited considerably in that respect. But as to say, the clouds, fear of the Chinese economic slowdown and widespread predictions of a hard landing have cast a long shadow over the Chinese supplier markets from Japan to Thailand in recent months. My feeling is that pessimism has been a little bit overdone. And there's a good Goldman Sachs report on the website today dealing with the possibilities, probabilities of a bit of a pickup in global GDP growth. I'm delighted to have that arrive today because I'd just been mulling that over in my own mind, and they have far more facts and figures to back the case. But you'll find a copy on that as well as the report in the subscribers area. And I think that well, I could go back to those two major themes, which I think will persist for a long time in terms of equities. These are the really bull themes, as far as I'm concerned, and that's emerging markets, of which I have a preference for the Asian emerging markets. I think we've got the best chance of getting good governance from those regions. And I also like Japan as a very long-term good recovery situation. But Japan, as I've emphasized yet again today, is still in the base development stage, so it's underperforming generally and will continue to underperform until we get the criteria that I described in today's comment of the day. And I can't say when that will actually occur. If Wall Street and other stock markets remain quite ebullient, and they will if Wall Street remains firm, then it'll be sooner. It could even be this year that Wall Street breaks above that. I beg your pardon, that the Nikkei breaks above that 12,000 level and then starts to form the first step above the base. On the other hand, if markets weaken, as I have thought they would, but they haven't in here so far, other than that sharp shakeout in March and the beginning of April. But if Wall Street and other stock markets were to begin to weaken, that would lead to almost certainly to an additional extension to this base formation in Japan. But it is a very good long-term recovery candidate for the patient who wish to accumulate while the market is still generally out of favor. The time to buy is perhaps this year and next year. For those who need performance now, then I think I'd wait until the first step above the base has been completed, as discussed and described in comment of the day. Now, the supply and elasticity theme, I think, is going to run and run and run in markets. I mentioned the Central and South America, but among developed country markets, there are some real stars in that respect. First, in the Pacific Rim area, we have Australia and New Zealand. And one that's hugely important that I haven't talked enough about in recent months would be Canada, which of course has huge quantities of oil in the tar sands, lots of mineral deposits there, lots of forestry products. So in terms of the supply and elasticity area, it is an absolutely key player in it. And the interest in those markets has helped to keep the Canadian currency known as, you might have seen, and I think it was in yesterday's comment, as the Petro Loonie, extremely firm. It's been one of the firmest currencies this year. So those are among developed countries. Those three, Australia, New Zealand, and Canada, are major beneficiaries of the whole supply and elasticity theme, and will remain of considerable in interest for really quite some time. Okay, now moving on to government bonds. Again, I maintain that the secular bull market in government bonds ended in June of 2003, and that we're in a very lengthy, predictably lengthy topping out process. It's sort of what you see in Japan in reverse. And the reason why it's a very lengthy process is because first people still fear deflation. And remember, if you think back a number of years, that long after inflation was in treat, remember when inflation became pariah number one in the 1980s, and then Paul Volcker came in as chairman of the US Federal Reserve, started to squeeze inflation out of the system. Well, people were raking over the carcass of inflation long after it was in steady retreat. And we're going to get the same thing. The deflation fears are this time in reverse. The deflation fears are going to be around for a very, very long time. when what is actually taking place is the emergence of a new inflationary cycle. And I've talked and written about that plenty, so I won't elaborate on too much in here. But I do think that these yields that we now see for government bonds are really unsustainable, that they're going to move up over the long term in a series of waves of higher lows and higher highs for yields. So if you're thinking in terms of futures prices, it'd be lower highs and lower lows. In other words, a secular bear market for long-dated government bonds. But we haven't even completed the top development phase yet, so it may be some time. I wouldn't be at all surprised if it took another year or two before we saw a clear upward trend established. In at least another year or so before we saw a clear upwards trend established on long-term charts of those yields and downward trends for the bond prices. But I'd be careful in that area. Now, in terms of currencies, we know the big surprise of the year has been the dollar's strong rally from that 80 level on the US dollar index. It's run into trouble near the psychological and lateral resistance near the 90 level. Today the dollar is a little bit steadier in here, and it had that good upside day yesterday. And but we have seen a loss of short-term uptrend consistency, and my own view is that we're closer to a high for the dollar and then a low. And you'll notice how bullish sentiment has been towards the US dollar in recent weeks, and I tend to regard that as a contrary indicator. But at this stage, I don't know whether the high that we had seen last week for the US dollar index was the high for this rally or a penultimate high. Now, with every day that we get the dollar index nudging back towards that 90 level, the odds of it only being a penultimate high are increasing, and right now we would need to see another downward dynamic to have that pendulum swing in favor of having seen the high. But I think we've certainly seen the best part of the dollar's rally. Moving on, in terms of precious metals first, the dollar is always going to be a huge influence in that sector. And they've actually held up extremely well given the strength of the dollar overall. In other words, precious metals certainly haven't fallen anywhere near as far as the dollar has risen. And gold, for instance, in here today is up a couple of dollars right now, 421.60, 65. Now, if investors did begin to believe, or those who are interested in precious metals, as and when they begin to believe that the US dollar has peaked, I think you'll get some explosive moves on the upside in gold, which is historically cheap and cheap relative to other assets. And silver would do even better. It's high beta gold, and there's going to be a silver ETF coming out soon. I think it's Barclays Group that's going to be bringing that out. And I would expect platinum, it's the one precious metal that's futures traded that's in backwardation, to do extremely well, and the laggard palladium would eventually respond quite strongly to those events as well. And I do think that we would see an explosive move upwards in the precious metals. As I say, once the people who mainly trade these precious metals do see some empirical evidence that the dollar has peaked and start to extrapolate the trend for the dollar lower. We will see a surge of interest in the precious metals, and I think that's going to be one of the big plays that we can expect to look forward to over the next 12 months or so. Right now, it's boring. It's been boring for a while, and it may well continue to be boring for a while until the dollar situation clarifies itself. The industrial metals can uncouple from the dollar. Certainly, a weak dollar would be a tailwind for them as well, just as a strong dollar is a bit of a headwind, but it's nowhere near the headwind that it is for precious metals. And the industrial metals, again, a lot of people have been talking them down this year where we had another number of shakeouts. There's nothing new about that. But you can look at that copper chart that I posted today, or I posted three copper charts, and copper's not far off the off the highs. And a number of the other industrial metals have firmed up recently. We had a particularly good upward dynamic in tin this week. And that's and most of them remain in backwardations, indicating that there is still a shortage of nearby material. So this remains a hugely interesting area. And last, but certainly not least, most importantly, energy. Energy is a major secular bull market, and I think we can look at any of the charts of oil, and we see that long-term upward trend. And I think that the supply-demand story regarding oil is extremely bullish. I'm delighted to see that there are a number of people who've been putting out bearish forecasts recently, and I don't want to be dismissive of those. I read them all very, very carefully, all that I see at any rate. Very, very carefully, and all have some merit, but the difference this time is for sure is the demand curve, and really we're going to have to get some sort of major shift, either for political or economic reasons, to other forms of energy. Now we've seen a bit of a shift in that direction. For instance, coal became quite competitive, and we saw China and other countries certainly increase their consumption of coal relative to oil, but then that causes the coal price to leapfrog higher. And I think that's the type of pattern that we're going to see really for quite a long time, that we will see oil get a little bit ahead of itself, then the alternatives will be more attractive, then they'll start to pick up in price. And maybe get a little bit overextended, and then we'll see oil begin to move again. But I do expect a long-term secular bull market here, and I really do want to participate in that, and am participating in that. And my main vehicle for that has been the Investec funds, and those are really core holdings, just as I have core holdings in the J.P. Morgan Fleming India Fund and other Asian funds. And last but not least, for speculative spice, we have the agricultural commodities, which are extremely cheap, and they all show varying stages of base formation development overall. It's a very, very volatile area. It always has been. I don't think that's ever going to change. But if you're interested in trading opportunities, when you see things like corn and soybeans and wheat and oats and any of the other agricultural commodities, when they have a significant shakeout, that's when they're interesting. And they get plenty of significant shakeouts. One buys them on weakness, not on strength, and it's a good idea to trade them out on the rallies, or at least use trailing stops. Well, that's it, folks. That's my big picture long-term outlook. Great weather here in England, and I'm off to Glyndebourne this weekend. Can't wait. I hope you have spectacular weekends as well. All the best.